From Vancouver, we present Episode 1 of The Kraken Wakes, a new serial adapted by Eric Cameron from the science fiction novel by John Wyndham. The Kraken Wakes, Episode 1.
Mike?
Six bells, 11 p.m.
In a few days, this honeymoon cruise will be just the memory.
I could sneak up to the bridge and fiddle with the compass over Circle the Azores for a while.
And get locked up in the bilge?
You mean the brig. The bilge is where... It's odd.
Oh.
Mars looks unusually red tonight.
I hope it isn't an omen.
Of course, being in the tropics, all the stars look brighter than they do at home.
It seems to be getting bigger.
It is getting bigger.
Look, there's another one. To the right of the first.
Well, there can't be two Marses.
There are two. And another to the left, see? Glowing like red embers.
It must be a flight of jets. And that's a cloud of luminous exhaust we're seeing. My God, they're heading this way.
Now there are four.
There are five now. They're huge. Gliding down across the ship's wake.
Oh, the first one's diving into the water. Two more are going in.
And you know how it can be with things of this nature, Mr. Watson. All sorts of fantastic stories make the rounds.
That's why I've come to see you, Captain Anderson. I'm a writer-broadcaster on the staff of the EBC, and I'm sure they'd be interested in a piece on last night's incident.
You mean BBC?
No, sir. EBC, English Broadcasting Company.
Oh.
It was formed 2 years ago, sir.
I see.
Now, every witness seems to have a different version, so I thought I'd check mine with your official one.
Oh, here's the entry in my log.
Well, we seem to agree that there were five objects. Impossible to divine as to shape.
They registered on the ship's radar screens. That's why they're tentatively assumed to have been aircraft of an unknown type.
What's your own private opinion, Captain? Did you ever see anything at all like them before?
No. I never did, but...
But what?
Well, not for the record, Mr. Watson. I've heard of two instances, almost exactly similar, in the last year. One time it was three of the things by night, the other it was half a dozen by daylight. Even so, they seem to have looked much the same. Just a kind of red fuzz. Both lots were in the Pacific.
You can't suggest an explanation I can quote.
On professional grounds, I prefer not. I'll just stick to my official log entry. We searched the spot for an hour last night and not a trace of anything on the water.
Is there any point in dragging?
Oh, it's deep there. Over 3,000 fathoms.
Well, somebody will put together a theory one day.
You can be sure there'll be plenty of theories. Some strange things can still happen.
Well, you never realized what you'd started, Mike, when you broadcast your story about the fireballs.
Look at this stack of mail. Over at EBC, I've been rechristened Fireball Watson.
Well, did you find anything worthwhile in the letter?
Five possibly have a reference to fireballs similar to those we saw from the ship. This letter's from Flight Lieutenant RAF, who's been grounded because they think he suffered some kind of hallucination. These two letters are from observatories that confess themselves puzzled by detecting small red bodies traveling at high speeds. But they're extremely guarded in their statements.
What's the next step?
We'll keep on collecting and sifting as much information as we can get from any source, sooner or later.
If we don't hurry, Mike, we'll never get seen.
Hang on, Phil. Look at this front page story. More fireballs.
I'd almost forgotten about them.
This is the first reported sighting in 10 months, a flight of 13. A radar station in Finland picked them up first, estimating their speed as 1,500 miles per hour.
What do they call them?
They're described simply as unidentified aircraft. The Swedes managed to spot them visually, describing them as small red dots. Norway confirmed, but estimated the speed at under 1,300 miles per hour.
It's time we made speed to the theater.
Wait. This is interesting. A Scottish station logged the fireballs at 1,000 miles per hour. A station in Ireland gave their speed as 800. A weather ship at about 65 degrees north calculated a speed close to 500. After that, they were not sighted again.
Presumably, they just flopped into the Atlantic.
It's the way some people drive.
Oh, Mike, you didn't even look before starting across.
If I were heavily insured and had been flattened by that jag, the column might.
Your toast is getting cold, darling. I used to be amused by a cartoon showing husbands hidden behind a newspaper at the breakfast table, but
listen
now...
to this, Phil. United States Navy took a crack at a flight of 8 fireballs heading directly toward a cruiser when she was lying off Puerto Rico. The fireballs violated U.S. territory by crossing the island in a dead straight line and almost over the ship herself.
What did they shoot at them with?
Guided missiles. Through his glasses, the captain watched 6 of the red dots change as they burst, one after another, into big white puffs.
And Washington has sent a note of protest to Moscow.
You guessed it.
Well, what's the Russian reaction?
The Kremlin has rejected the U.S. note. It also claims that its own weapons have destroyed more than 20 of these unidentified craft over Soviet territory.
Which bounces the ball right back across the court. Well, if the Russians have been blowing up fireballs...
They say that, but no proof of it.
Then what's their game? The fireballs don't appear to do anything.
Well, at least nothing that anyone seems to know about.
Must be an awfully expensive experiment. There have been hundreds of the things in the last couple of years.
Yes, and every one a total write-off.
At least the fish can get a close look at them.
They might even awake the Kraken.
The what?
The Kraken. Don't you know that thing of Tennyson's? Below the thunders of the upper deep, far, far beneath in the abysmal sea, his ancient, dreamless, uninvaded sleep, the Kraken sleepeth.
Well, if there is such a monster as the Kraken, I hope I never meet up with it.
Heavens, look at the time. I have to charge down to the Admiralty.
What's happening there?
Freddie Whittier got a call the other day while I was on location. A Captain Winters said the Admiralty appreciated the snippets of information that EBC has been passing along to them on the fireball sightings. He suggested that since I'm more or less the EBC's expert on fireballs, I might be interested in examining what they've been able to put together. They're anxious to build up as complete a picture as possible, so we're going to...
In here, Mr. Watson.
So this is the map room, Captain?
One of several. Now, I must explain that while what I'm going to show you is not exactly an official secret, the Admiralty prefers that you not make public use of it yet. Do you agree to that condition?
Mum's the word.
Good. Well, I think we'll start with this map of the world. You see the hatching of fine lines all over it?
Looks like a spider's web.
But each line is numbered and dated. And here and there we have these clusters of red dots. Now hold this magnifying glass over the area southeast of the Azores.
My first sighting, eh?
Correct. There are quite a number of other red dots in that area.
I take it each dot represents the descent of a fireball.
One or more. The lines, of course, are only for those on which we have had good enough information to plot the course. Now, stand back a bit, Mr. Watson. Narrow your eyes and get a light and shade impression of the map.
Yes, I see what you mean, Captain Winters. Areas of concentration.
5 main ones and a number of lesser. The densest of the lot to the southwest of Cuba. Another 600 miles south of the Cocos Islands. And pretty heavy concentrations off the Philippines, Japan, and the Aleutians. Anything else strike you?
No, I don't think so.
Well, take a look at this bathymetric chart.
All the concentrations are in deep water areas.
Exactly. There aren't many reports of descents where the depth is less than 4,000 fathoms, and none at all where it's less than 2,000.
So, just what?
Exactly. All descents.
sense. No reports of any fireballs coming up.
Have you any idea at all what all this means?
Well, as to theories, we have a number, but all unsatisfactory for one reason or another.
What about the Russians?
Oh, no. It's nothing to do with them. In fact, they're a lot more worried about it than we are. But what both we and the Russians are perfectly satisfied about is that these things are not natural phenomena. Nor are they random.
The illustrious Sherlock Holmes used to say to my namesake, when you have eliminated the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth.
Yes.
Which is to say that it's no terrestrial nation that's doing it.
That isn't the kind of solution I like.
You know, the bottom of the sea would be a very good place for visitors from outer space to hide. If one could manage the technical difficulties.
Well, undoubtedly, Mr. Watson, but among these technical difficulties happens to be pressure of 4 or 5 tons per square inch in the interesting areas.
The other obvious question is, of course, what they seem to be doing.
Yes.
Meaning, no clue.
They come. Maybe they go. But preponderantly, they come. That's about all.
Are you doing anything about it? Or shouldn't I ask?
Oh, well, that's why you're here. Yes, I was coming around to that. We're going to try an inspection. Just at the moment, it's not considered to be a matter for direct broadcast, nor even for publication, but there ought to be a competent record of it. So, if your EBC people happen to feel interested enough to send you along with some recording gear...
Well, where would it be?
Well, approximately in this area of the Caribbean, southwest of Cuba. Mm.
My wife has a passionate devotion to tropical sunshine, the West Indian kind in particular.
By all means, bring her along. Yes, I understand she's an experienced scriptwriter. Lieutenant Commander Powers will be in charge of the technical operations. Now, suppose we discuss the project with your director.
Take up the top bowlines now. Aye, aye, sir.
It's just a big metal ball.
Don't let Commander Powers hear you. That's his baby.
Now, this instrument that you now see is what we call a bathyscope. The bathyscope has been constructed to resist a pressure approaching 2 tons to the square inch, giving it a theoretical floor of 1,500 fathoms. We do not propose to use it to a greater depth than 1,200 fathoms, just over 7,000 feet, thus providing for a safety factor of some 720 pounds to the square inch. Even at this, it will considerably surpass. That is the present limit of our ability to make direct visual observations. However, we have in this other metal sphere a new instrument with which we hope to make observations at something like twice the depth attainable by the bathyscope. It's entirely automatic. In addition to registering pressures, temperature, currents, and so on, and transmitting the readings to the surface, it is equipped with small television cameras. We plan to start the manned descent at sunrise. 2 naval technicians, Petty Officers Wiseman and Trant, will be the bathyscope crew. As you all know, sunrise in the tropics comes bright and early. Hello, bathyscope. All set to submerge.
Okay, sir. Lower away now.
Winch control, lower away.
I get claustrophobia squeezed into that tin can.
Well, they couldn't have picked a better day. Not a breath of wind.
Well, what happens now?
Well, we all go up to the bridge and watch the television screen. It's been rigged up as a kind of control center. It's likely to take a while before they get down.
Probably no. Life in the sea exists in fairly well-defined levels. In the better inhabited strata, the water is full of plankton, which behaves like a continuous dust storm and obscures everything but creatures that approach very closely. The bathyscope is below those levels now, and in the strata where there is no plankton for food, and consequently, there are few fish. Hello, bathyscope. All in order below there?
Aye, aye, sir.
1/2 mile coming up. Check.
499. Now, 1/2 mile, sir.
500 fathoms.
There's something out this way.
keeping on the edge of the lake. A big thing. A concrete. Maybe a giant squid. No, it can't be a whale, not down here.
Improbable, but not impossible.
Well, in that case, it's sheared off now anyway.
Well, from now on, it's all yours, lads. You sure you're quite happy down there?
Everything's working fine, sir. We'll go on.
All right. About 300 fathoms more to go. See anything now?
No, sir. All black and dead now. Now we can see something below. Luminous fish. Small shoal there. See?
Yes, yes, we have them on the TV screen. Stopping you now, boys. 1,200 fathoms. Stop deck winch.
Well, whatever it was we came here to find, we've not found it.
The echogram gives the bottom hereabouts as still 3 miles or so below where the bathyscope is stopped. Hello there. Bathyscope. We're going to start you up now. Ready?
Okay, sir. All set.
Hello, winch control. Fall away. Hello, bathyscope. All okay?
There's something out there. Something big. Can't see it properly. Have you got it on the TV screen up there?
No, no, not yet.
Probably because it keeps just on the fringe of the light. Can't be that whale again, not at this step. I'll try and get a sharper focus on the camera for you.
What's that lighter patch on the screen?
Oh, hello, bathyscope. We have something on screen now, but it's very indistinct.
Yes, seems to be circling now. I'll try it. Got a better glimpse of it then. It's not the whale. Anyway, there. See it? Now?
Yes, something roughly oval, but still indistinct on the screen.
Could be a big fish or maybe something else, kind of turtle-shaped. Monstrous brute, anyway. Circling a bit closer now.
Can you make out any detail yet?
No, just the overall shape. It's keeping pace with us.
Hello, bathyscope. Target has just got off the screen.
It's going up now, rising faster than we are. Getting beyond our angle of view. Ought to be a wind on the top of this thing. Lost it now. Gone somewhere up above us. Maybe.
Maybe things go down.
Hello, bathyscope. Do you read me? Hello, bathyscope.
Why is the deck winch running so fast?
Because there's nothing at the end of the cable. We've lost the bathyscope. Sound the emergency signal.
A very good script, Mrs. Watson.
Thank you, Captain.
Nevertheless, I'm afraid I'm going to have to ask you to hold it up for a while.
My wife tried to make it a tribute to the two men who lost their lives in the bathyscope.
I know, and I'm sorry. But I did warn you that the story wouldn't be for immediate release.
May I ask why, Captain Winters?
The crux of the thing is those fused cables. Imagination staggers a bit at the thought of a creature capable of snapping through a steel hawser.
Not just one cable. The same thing happened the next day to the unmanned probe that Commander Powers sent down.
And to the third on the following day.
Yes, when I examined the ends of the wire ropes, I had expected to see them unraveled, splayed out, brush-like. But they were melted together. Both the main and the communications cables ended in a blob of fused metal. This brings us smack up against the possibility that there's a creature capable of cutting through them like an oxyacetylene flame. The mind rejects that suggestion. However, a thing like that is not just a hazard of deep sea diving. And we want to know more about just what kind of a hazard it is before we give out a release on it. But I assure you that you'll be notified of release at the earliest possible moment.
Well, I guess that's that.
I'm afraid so.
Honestly, Captain Winters, and off the record if you like, have you any idea what can have done it?
On or off the record, Mrs. Watson, I can think of no explanation that approaches being possible. I doubt whether anyone else in the service has an idea.
For goodness sake, Mike, when are you going to stop dropping cigarette ashes on the new carpet?
Oh, don't worry about it, darling. Cigarette ash keeps out moths. Oh, it's about time for the EBC news, isn't it?
Oh, it's started by now.
Details not immediately available. According to the bulletin issued from Washington less than an hour ago, an American naval unit conducting research into deep sea conditions somewhere off the Philippines has suffered the loss of a depth chamber. Closer to home, a Russian trawler narrowly missed a collision with the Canadian submarine Qualicum, currently engaged in maneuvers with the Royal Navy northeast of Iceland. And now a look at the weather. Tonight will be clear.
Wouldn't you know it? The American story will be spread all over the front pages by tomorrow morning.
Why should it be? All the public knows is that an American diving bell has been lost. The U.S. Navy could say that the cable was defective. No, I very much doubt that anyone who doesn't know would suspect a link between deep-sea diving accidents and the topic of mysterious fireballs, which in any case are old hat now.
Mm, you're probably right, Phil.
Captain Winters might be able to find out if the Americans were on the same kind of project that we covered.
If he pulls some strings, maybe we could compare notes with whoever was covering it. Between the Royal Navy and the EBC, we ought to be able to scratch up something.
Then we'll have to be up bright and early tomorrow morning.
I don't mind telling you, Mrs. Watson, it took some strategic maneuver to get Commander Shaw over here.
You can say that again, Captain Winters. Every NATO intelligence organization wants to pump me. But since you people had the same sort of experience in the Caribbean, the British Navy got priority.
Well, as I explained earlier, Commander, the Watsons have been very closely associated from the outset with the research on this phenomenon. And you're aware, of course, that no details of our own catastrophe have leaked out, apart from the loss of the bathyscope and its crew.
No mention of the fused cables?
Not one.
Oh, well, here's the story. We were using an automatic instrument, pretty much like the one you people lost. The idea was to send that down first. And if it came up again okay, then we'd take another crack at it with a manned depth chamber. We had two ships. One was the research vessel Dolphin, with the depth chambers and gear. We used another ship as an observation platform. Because there was so much stuff aboard the Dolphin, we would have been falling over each other. We had microwave between the ships, so we could watch on our screens just as well as they could on theirs. But it was a pretty boring show. By 2.5 miles down, I was out on deck having a smoke. Suddenly, there was a yell from inside the saloon. I had my back to the research ship. A moment before, she'd been lying there like a duck asleep on a pond. Well, I don't know what kind of thunderstorms you folks have over here, but in some places they have a kind where the lightning looks like it's running around all over a building. And that was the way the research ship looked just then. And then she blew up.
But the news bulletin said a diving chamber had been lost, not the entire ship.
That's right, ma'am. And don't ask me why they're keeping the lid on the full story. Anyway, when the Dolphin blew up, we all of us hit the deck in a split second. And then there was spray and scrap coming down all over. When we could look again, there wasn't anything there but a lot of water getting itself smoothed up.
Did you collect any debris to study?
Well, there wasn't much to pick up. A few bits of wood, half a dozen life buoys, and 3 bodies all badly burnt. We collected what there was and returned to the base.
Do you know what caused the explosion?
Well, I'm told it isn't possible to persuade a high charge, say a few million volts, to run up an uninsulated hawser in seawater, so I've got to accept that. But all I say is that if it were possible, then I guess the effect might be quite a bit like what we saw. It looked to me like it followed the main hawser. But the physics boys won't buy that.
They've no alternative suggestions?
Oh, sure. Several. Some of them could sound quite convincing to a fellow who hadn't seen it happen. Anyway, the physics boys are still baffled by those fused cables of yours, because whatever happened to the Dolphin, those cable severances on the British gear couldn't have been accidental. Oh, incidentally, we've got a couple more probes lined up, but no publicity, please.
Where are they being done?
One off the Aleutians, the other in a deep spot in the Guatemala Basin.
If you look at this map, Mrs. Watson, you can see that those two particular areas have had a comparatively large...
You're driving rather fast, Mike.
Look who's talking. At least I drive carefully.
Oh. Now, you know perfectly well a lorry backed into the car when I was at the hairdresser's and then it just drove off.
Oh, the phantom bumper basher. Maybe I could do a little piece on the subject for Freddy's This and That program.
Things are a bit slack just now.
Yes, very little's happened since the bathyscope story was released 2 months ago.
Well, there was nothing little about the flood of letters that came in.
But nothing of any value.
Imagine the mountains of mail the Americans had to cope with when the loss of the Dolphin was made public.
I wonder how Commander Shaw managed.
He's aboard the probe ship off Guatemala.
How do you know he is?
Winters mentioned it last week when we were checking news reports.
Well, speaking of news...
A majority of the opposition members objected that the minister's reply to the House was an obvious evasion of responsibility by the government. Here is a news bulletin. A United Press dispatch from Washington states that the United States Navy has reported the loss of another deep-sea research ship. The USN Barracuda was operating south of the Aleutians when radio transmission cut out suddenly. The ship is reported sunk with all hands. Search aircraft spotted wreckage which suggested that some kind of explosion might have occurred.
Commander Shaw is lucky.
In France, another student demonstration tangled traffic for several blocks in...
There's simply got to be an explanation. Ships just don't blow up without a reason.
When and if we do discover the reason, maybe we'll wish we'd never got involved in this strange business. There's something very, very evil about it.
Vancouver, you have heard Episode 1 of The Kraken Wakes, a new serial adapted by Eric Cameron from the science fiction novel by John Wyndham. The following actors were featured in this episode: Sam Payne, Shirley Broderick, Michael Irwin, Derek Ralston, Alan Routon, Ivor Harries, Greg Barnes, and Peter Brockington. Sound effects, Lars Eastholm. The play was produced in the Vancouver studios of the CBC and directed by Norman Newton, with technical operation by Ian Stevens.